Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where our job is to help you build visibility, professional credibility, and connection with your ideal client by putting the human at the center of innovative marketing, so you can build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship with your ideal clients. I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm honored that you're here with me. If you haven't joined our wonderful marketing transformation community yet, go to innovabiz.co and collect your free gift as well. Do subscribe to the show and also leave a review because it helps others find us. Let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
It's important for companies to understand that business is about relationship. These indicators are not the main focus. They're not the priority. This sounds counterintuitive because many companies are so focused and so obsessed with these business indicators. But if you support the relationship, you support the human being, this indicator, I can promise you and I can give you a guarantee that if you support the relationship, business indicator will naturally thrive.
Welcome back. I hope your week's been awesome so far. If you haven't yet listened to my recent conversations with Michael Roderick of Small Pond Enterprises and with Ross Simmons, the founder of Foundation Marketing, then do go listen in, but only after you've listened to today's conversation. I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Dr. Bruno Signaco. He's an international business consultant, an international speaker, a business coach, and for over 20 years, he's advised and trained hundreds of companies on international trade activities and international marketing. He's a university lecturer. He's senior fellow of the Higher Education Academy in the UK. He's also the author of a whole range of business and personal development books published in different languages. His latest book is The Art of Compassionate Business, Main Principles for Human-Oriented Enterprises. His business is Human-Oriented Enterprise. No surprises there. In our discussion today, Bruno talked to me about what is compassion and love in a business context and how to build long-term win-win relationships through caring. We talked about a service focus as opposed to a selling focus, and we talked about providing outstanding experiences that trigger positive emotions at every customer touch point. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Dr. Bruno Signaco. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, all the way from London in the UK, Dr. Bruno Signaco, who is an international business consultant, a speaker, a business coach, a lecturer, and also author of multiple books, and his latest book is The Art of Compassionate Business. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, Bruno. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
I'm honored to have been invited. Thank you very much for your invite. Thank you.
Now, you've done a lot in your life's journey so far. How did you end up getting into lectureship and book writing and talking about all things compassion and, love in business? We'll get on to that in a moment, I think.
Thank you very much for the question. Very interesting. So I want to comment that I have been lecturing for teaching at university, more especially for nearly 20 years. I have been teaching at undergraduate levels and postgraduate level. And also, I have to say that I feel very pleased to teach to students because the idea is that I learn from students. They learn from me, but I learn from a student. But also, I have been delivering some consultancy services to companies, especially small and medium-sized companies, for nearly 25 years. especially based on international marketing and also social entrepreneurship. And well, it's a very interesting life story because at the beginning I was much more business oriented. When I started with consultancy services, I started a very business oriented, for example, profit focus, revenue focus. And over time, because of my qualification and also the reading and research that I conducted, I observed that my vision changed and also my perspective on business changed to a more humanistic perspective, to a much more human-oriented perspective. And after many years of researching on human enterprise and also human-oriented business, this was coronated by my new book, The Art of Compassionate Business, that was the result of 3 years research on how companies can get more profitable, what is very important, the bottom line, how can they get more, for example, having more sales, much more market share, how they can get, for example, much more customers, but at the same time, how they can care for stakeholders. Stakeholders, we define individuals and groups with interest in our organization. So I discovered that there are some values or principles that companies should take into consideration to become much more human-oriented, much more humane. And this principle applies to any company. Small companies, big companies, medium-sized companies, but also in any sector. When companies follow these principles, they are universal principles, companies naturally improve what we call the key performance indicators, such as profitability, productivity, efficiency. So instead of focusing on this indicator first, companies should focus much more on strengthening and branching relationship with the stakeholders, because business is about stakeholders, people. So it's the building brick of any business activity.
Yeah, I love that. My whole marketing philosophy is around, you know, making marketing more human again. And I know you talk in some parts of the book, and or maybe it's in one of your blogs, about the abdicating our responsibilities to the might of technology. And I think that, you know, using the technology in a way that allows more of those human interactions is actually much better. In the prelude, I think, of the book, you say that at some point you asked yourself, is there a better way to perform business activities more humanely? And you were referring back to that, you know, just focused on the KPI measures and so on. And that was the idea that kind of was paramount to developing the book and exploring that idea further.
Yes, but we have to understand that if we read the newspapers, we read some business magazine, you will see many examples of companies that are not loving, they're not compassionate. For example, companies that fire employees without mercy, company that, for example, exploit employees, or company that deceive customer in a very willing way, or company that are being not environmentally friendly. These are not examples of companies that are human-oriented. They're not companies that look for the triple bottom line, looking for profit, for people, but also looking for the planet. So, but I discovered that there is a new generation of companies that is very strong generation coming up, that companies that are not only caring for their business indicator, what are very important for company survival and company success, but also they are caring for relationship, and they look for win-win relationship. This means mutually beneficial relationship that are, they have a long-term perspective. This means they're not focusing only on the short-term, a transactional approach, but they are focusing on a much longer perspective, which implies satisfying the needs of each party in a very continuous way. Not only one-off, but a continuous transaction, a series of transactions. This means a relationship that is valuable and is worthy. So I feel that this is interesting because this new generation of companies, they're setting the compass for other companies to come, and they can show different people that you can be both business-oriented and also human-oriented. They're not incompatible. But if you're only business-oriented, you're dismissing people. So this is important, because why you will dismiss people that are the source of profit? So this is sound a bit counterintuitive, but if you care for customers, they're more likely to come back, but also recommend your company to other customers, potential customers, and they can develop. So for example, positive recommendation, they can leave some positive reviews online, and if you don't satisfy their needs, customers easily switch from your company to competitor. They have a lot of choice. Yeah. Am I clear?
Yeah, and it's particularly easy these days with the internet and having access to all that information, isn't it, that people can choose to go elsewhere if they're unhappy.
Yes.
I like that you said long-term relationships, and I think what's playing out right now in this COVID kind of dominated world where, you mentioned companies that are firing employees or companies that are taking advantage of customers in different ways. And I think that's playing out in some ways in this COVID world, but there's also the other side of the coin is playing out strongly too. The companies that really care for their employees or customers, for example, that, they're having them work from home even when the situation might be that their activities have to change in order to be able to do that effectively, or they're looking after their customers in the sense of pausing payments for ongoing services or providing additional services to help them through this difficult time. So how do you see those things playing out right now in the COVID world? Because an environment like that really highlights it, doesn't it, or magnifies the difference.
I like your example, Son. I agree that some companies are showing a much more compassionate attitude. But let's define compassion. What is compassion about? Compassion is caring for others and understanding that everyone has problems. So we are all human, and we human beings, and we have problems. And it's important to support each other when we have problems. Because in business, there is a principle that is called interdependence. No company can succeed on its own. No company can thrive without customer. No company can thrive without employees. No company can thrive without the community or suppliers. And some companies during the COVID era, they're taking into account that employees, one of the most important assets alongside customers, need some support. They feel much more vulnerable. They feel much more affected. They're fearful of losing their job. And in some cases, they have a lot of responsibility caring for their children at home, working a flexible hour. So companies that are more compassionate and supportive of employees allow to use some technology like MS Teams or, for example, Adobe Connect or any other. And they allow them to work flexible hours. They allow them, in some cases, to work part-time. And they take into account that this will be a temporary challenge that many companies have with the COVID. And sooner or later, hopefully, this will be sorted out. And companies have to understand that the employees were there in past times. They were there when company needed their support. So there is a principle also that in business should apply, that is the principle of reciprocity. When you treat others in a supportive way, and this is very important for all CEOs and leaders, when you treat others in a supportive way, Robert Cialdini, the famous social psychologist, observed, they are more likely to treat you in a reciprocal way. This means they are more likely to support you. When you treat others in an unsupportive way, this means that you are not caring for them. You don't care for them, you care only for profit. They are more likely to not to support you, to withdraw their support. So employees are willing to support the company in challenging times if they feel supported. This should be a win-win relationship, win-win agreement. This means no party should win at the expense of other. And the example that you gave were perfect because companies that are flexible, that allow employees to work from home, because in many cases you don't need to go to the premises, these companies show adaptiveness, and these companies are much more likely to recover when this is finished because employees will be there supporting the company as soon as this pandemic finishes. So this is a good example, but also you see companies that are very compassionate because they're refraining from delivering goods or services because this is probably banned by the government. In the case, for example, in many cases, many countries, the restaurant or hotel industry, they are banned yet or they're very restricted. Well, companies restrict their business activity, but they keep their employees because they know that sooner or later this will be sorted out. And also the employees is the most important asset. It's the interface between the company and the external stakeholder. So a compassionate attitude shouldn't be speculative, but should be wholehearted and should be hearty in the way that we care for our best asset. I don't like the word asset or resources, human resources, but I would like to, we care about human beings, legitimate human beings that need their need to be met, a need that could be not only economic, it could be emotional, mental, spiritual, and others.
Yeah. I like that, you know, we don't refer to people as assets or anything like that. It just sounds so derogatory and disrespectful. It's their people. And if we know their name, we should be even talking to them by name. So the best example I've seen recently in the last week, I think this was a couple of days ago, I saw on the news where a restaurant, and I can't remember where it was, a restaurant had to close down because they couldn't stay open. And so instead of laying off staff, they basically turned their kitchen over into producing meals for people that were in lockdown or people that were vulnerable for other reasons and couldn't go out, or maybe they were struggling to pay for food. So they basically started big-scale cooking as they were used to for normal restaurant duty, except different meals, and started delivering those meals at no charge to those people, to these vulnerable people in the society. So to me, that is a great example of compassion, because, you know, they were looking after their employees who they were still paying, and the employees were still doing the work. They were still buying the raw materials, so they were looking after their suppliers, and they were supporting vulnerable people in the community. So they were looking after, an aspect of the community. So, and you think about that and you say, that's wonderful, and it makes you feel warm, and there's a lot of emotional connection there. But on the business side of that, and, you know, that's why I say I like what you said earlier about long-term, on the business side of that, isn't that the smarter way to do it? Because if those people sometime in the future think, let's go out for dinner, they'll think of that, won't they? And they'll say, let's go to that restaurant because they were there for us when we needed some support.
I agree with you completely. So I want to say that in this case, this example that you gave of this company, I read the article too, is about meaningful mission, meaningful purpose. Because many companies limit their social approach only to some specific activities that we call corporate social responsibility, specific activity to benefit communities or benefit different external stakeholders. But this should be part of their mission, the main purpose, why the company is in the market, and their vision, the future state that they want to achieve. When companies understand that the mission is not only related to economic results, economic outcomes, but also to create a better world, in this case, you gave a good example, helping people in need. This, according to research, when the mission is meaningful, this means it's socially oriented, this company is more prone to attract talents, to be much more preferred by customers, to also, in this case, this work environments, the employees tend to suffer less from stress levels. Employees tend to be much more satisfied. There is much more employee, what we call employee retention, that don't like the word retention, but also less employee turnover. So companies, they're doing themselves, they're benefiting themselves, not only the community, when they are socially oriented. They're helping the world to become a better place, as you mentioned, helping others in need, but also companies are more likely to be supported when they are in need. There is a very interesting example of the company Whole Foods, in the first period of their life, they have some problems with some floods, and they were affected by floods. And because this company have been supported with the community and have been supported with customers and have been supported with suppliers, when they suffer from this catastrophe, this means the flood that affected their premises, these stakeholders help the company get reconstructed. Why? Because they want to reciprocate. They wanted to reciprocate. This means that you supporting community, you supporting customer, you are not only building a long-term relationship, mutually beneficial relationship, but also you have a network. You have a network of different stakeholders that are willing to give their best, to go the extra mile when the company needs. So this is the best approach. And the best approach implies not only focusing on social activities in a very isolated way, only specific, but this social approach, this humanness or humanity should be embedded in the company's mission. A very interesting question that I always tell my clients is, Is this activity benefiting all stakeholders involved, not only one, not only customer, not only the company, or is creating some harm or causing some harm to other stakeholders, for example, the community? If so, this type of business activity should be avoided. So this means should be a win-win-win. Everyone involved should be benefited by the company's activities, and companies, by doing so, create much more trust bonds, trust relationship. And trust cannot be bought with gimmicks like promotional stratagems or ploys or ruses, but trust is building up over time. When you satisfy other needs, they tend to behave alike. They tend to satisfy the company's need in a natural way. They feel indebted. They feel indebted to do so.
Mm. Yeah, I'm motivated to do so, right? Because they care. They care.
They care. Yeah. Mm. I completely agree.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. Now, you in the book, you talk a lot about love. You use the word love in the relationship. And I mean, to me, you know, the fundamental principle is getting an emotional engagement with all those different community, the different groups like the employees, the customers, the suppliers, the vendors, and the community, the larger community outside that environment. But you use the word love. So I'm fascinated. Why did you choose to use the word love instead of staying, you know, inside the conservative business language of engagement, community engagement, or even care or empathy?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question. And I was asked this question many times when I gave some talk for example, higher education institution and also some corporate clients. And they told me, why don't you use the business terminology, the business words? Well, because many of the business words are wrong. I will tell you, give you a specific example. Many words are connected to military discipline, strategy, tactics. This means that you want to defeat others. And many words are connected to a quantitative aspect of business, market share, sales, or costs, all that can be counted. And there is a famous thinker that observed, not everything that can be counted count, not everything that count can be counted. What about companionship? What about loyalty? What about support? What about care? But also we see that in the business world, some concepts related to compassion, care, support, that are all byproducts from the word love, because love in the book, I consider love from a humanistic perspective. It's not love that you feel only for your close circle, but it's love that you feel for the human being. You recognize any human being as a legitimate being whose need should be satisfied when you interact with them. They're not to be used. They're not to be abused. They're not a resource. They're not an asset, but they're a human being that should be respected and should be supported if you want to build a relationship. You're not obliged to build a relationship with them, but if you want, you can only build a relationship when the needs of both parties are satisfied. But I was saying that love is a much wider approach of love, which implies developing trust and cooperation bond with others, connecting on an emotional and mental level. In the business environment, everything is very rational. It's rationally oriented. This means, we have to meet these objectives, quantitative objectives, smart objectives. But what about aspects that cannot be measured, that are so important? Can you measure, for example, the love that the customer feel for your company? Can you measure the, for example, the love that the employee feel for your company when they are supporting your project? You cannot measure this. In practice, most of the important things in business cannot be measured. So using a vocabulary like love, love is a very general word which includes compassion, support, gratefulness, generosity. Mm. All these are byproducts. When a company engages in this loving attitude, are more likely to build a much more sustainable business project. So in practice, love, we shouldn't be limiting love only to non-business environment, but should be also, we should get accustomed to using love in the business environment. Obviously, you have to understand that the connotation of love is much wider. This means love for the human being. So some philosophers and thinkers, psychologists like Erich Fromm, observe that loving close people is easy. Loving close people is easy, but loving the humanity, loving the humankind, loving all people around, the one that are connected to your business in a direct or indirect way, This is the challenge, and I challenge companies to do so, and I feel very welcome. At the beginning, they're a bit suspicious when I talk about this, but then they are welcoming the message. That is a message that is very refreshing for the current business environment.
Yeah, and I think you made a very important point there that you can choose not to have a relationship with somebody. Let's say you meet somebody and you don't like their values. If it's, say, somebody that might be a supplier of a service or product to you, and you don't agree with their values, you don't align with their values, you can choose not to have the relationship. You can choose not to become their customer, not to buy from them. Likewise, if you're a company trying to serve your customers, then those that are not a good match for you, for whatever reason, you can also choose not to have the relationship. But those that you want to serve, or those that you want to enter into a relationship with as a customer of them, that's where, if you have that attitude of it's a loving relationship and it's long term. Again, I come back to what you said right at the beginning, the long term. I really love that, because I think, once we build that, and of course, if you take the parallel with a close, relative or partner, let's say, where there is a loving relationship, generally we treat those as long-term relationships too. So, there are parallels, aren't there?
There are parallels. And I want to observe that I like your comment. When you said, if we don't like this customer or this supplier, many companies do the opposite. They try to force customer into buying their product. This is what we call manipulatory marketing. How they do this, for example, cajoling customer with some, for example, spam, or for example, unsolicited calls, or for example, making customer buy the most expensive product, not the most suitable for them. This is not a loving approach. This is not a generous approach. And customer is very intelligent. When they discover they have been deceived, they are very willing to switch from this company to others. So, and this cannot be sustaining a relationship over time. And remember, company have to remember, profit do not come from the sky, do not come from a river, from the sea. They come from customer. If you do not treat customer in a loving way, the main source of your profit for many companies, these customers are very willing not only not to buy from your company, but they leave negative recommendation about your company, which will push away other customers, and your business will be probably going down the hill. So the idea is that we have to be aware of this, but also if the customer is not a good match, there is not a problem, because here we have to change the mentality, the mindset. It's not about selling, it's about serving. And many people get confused with serving and selling. They believe that serving is servitude. And we're not talking about servitude. We're trying to add value to customer. They're trying to give our best product. If there is not a match, customer shouldn't be cajoled and should be left free to choose from other companies. And also, we should be grateful with this customer that didn't buy from our company because of their time, the time that they spent looking at our product. And this customer in the future might come back or not, but this was not a good match. The same applies with suppliers. If we cannot get a good deal with suppliers, a win-win deal with supplier, it's better to leave the supplier free to choose other companies to serve. It's all about interdependence. This was mentioned by the famous, the legendary guru, Stephen Covey, that says business is about interdependence. This means we have to depend on each other. No business is an island, paraphrasing a philosopher. Yeah. So very important to take into account that the relationship should be always long-term oriented, but also should be mutually beneficial. If they're not mutually beneficial, the relationship will break up naturally, because we don't want one-off transaction with each of the stakeholders. We want a long-term bond.
Yeah. I love that you outlined that so clearly, the service versus sales, and delineated what service and not servitude. It's actually making a difference to solving a problem for your customer, or if it's a case of I guess if you're the customer, then you're expecting the service from your supplier.
But I like this comment, and I want to add to your comment that is about under promising and over performing. When you serve customer, you're not thinking about your company, you are thinking about them. because when you think about them, they will think about you. I know that sounds a bit counterintuitive, but when you think about them, you fully think about them. What their needs are, what are their values, what are the most important principles that are involved in this transaction. But also, overperforming means giving more than expected. For example, I give an example. I'm half Italian, and so I went to a coffee shop a long time ago before the pandemic, and they're the big chains. I won't name the big chains, but the coffee shop chains. And the first coffee shop chain, I went and asked for a cappuccino, and they told me, okay, yeah, yes, go to the table, and also I will take the cappuccino. Okay, perfect. 15 minutes later, they came to the table, a bit late for a cappuccino, and they brought the cappuccino, and they told me, here is your cappuccino. Thank you very much. I drank the cappuccino, was cold. not good. And so I didn't say anything. I was very respectful. I left the place and I went to the competitor. I don't like the word competitor either. I mentioned this in my book, but I went to other companies that were serving customer in a similar way, offering similar products, coffee, for example. And so I went to the other company and I asked for a cappuccino. They told me, go to the table. I will take the cappuccino. 2 minutes later, they came with the cappuccino and very kindly offered me the cappuccino. And then I tried the cappuccino, was hot, delicious, very tasty. And so, and they forgot like a plate with some biscuits. I said, sorry, you're forgetting, I didn't order this. No, this is not, I'm not forgetting anything. This is a gift. This is a gift for you to enjoy the cappuccino. So the first company didn't even meet my minimal needs. Company exceeding, delighting me, what we call delight. So which company do you think that I came back? So always you have to create an imbalance. This means that you have to give more than expected. But, and in some cases, it doesn't have to be monetary things. Could be you can give free support, you can give free delivery. In some cases, you can be open to any feedback or any criticism from customer. You can replace the product or you can give some little thing. For example, the biscuit that they gave me in the second company doesn't cost so much from the company's viewpoint, probably pennies or cents, but in practice represented a lot of value to me. So always exceeding customer expectation, because meeting customer expectation is easy. Most companies will try to do the basic, but let's try to go further. And this means supporting them, trying to consider their unique needs. Unique needs, this means that we want to go further. We want to delight them. We want to create a very important bond with this customer. And also this applies to other stakeholders like employees and other stakeholders.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I have to say that as a cafe supplying coffee, I would have thought it was almost a criminal offense to give cold cappuccino to an Italian who is a connoisseur of good coffee.
Yes, it was very bad. But you know what? Then my friends, I commented about this to my friends, and you know what? My friends are always going back to the second company. So this company, the first company, not only lost me as a customer, but also lost other potential customers, my friends, and my friends' friends, and friends' friends' friends. So there is a positive circle that the second company created and the negative cycle or circle that the first company created. So we have to understand that we are all connected. So no company can thrive on its own. And so when we take into account different stakeholders that we're connected to, our business project will be enhanced. When we do not take into account, when they try to cut them off, for example, as we mentioned, many companies firing employees in a very merciless manner, well, this will be fighting us. This will be getting back to us in a negative way, because people are very intelligent when making decisions. People have good memory when companies are not considering, when companies are not. And also, there is always an emotional basis in any decision. This is according to research. When people feel bad, we're talking about employees, customer, what is the negative aspect of emotional enhancement? When people feel bad when dealing with a company, this company sooner or later will be cut off. Because what is customer satisfaction? It's about experiencing positive emotional state, like a delight or peacefulness. So when customer does not feel satisfied, they feel resentful or regretful, or they hate this company, this is not creating a good relationship. So remember that in business, many business people try to cut off emotions from the business environment, but emotions are one of the most important factors when you're making any decision, including business decision. So when customers feel good, and this means not only feel good when they buy the product, feeling good when they buy the product, when they contact the company after buying the product to have some clarification, when they want to return the product, when they talk to customer service and they're not put it with a machine that is dial one, dial two, and then they keep on holding on for 50 minutes. When customers are treated in a very respectful way, their time is valued, well, customer will tend to feel good. Feel good means that they tend to experience emotional states that are positive, like they feel like probably love for this company, or they feel like grateful. And these customers are more likely to connect with this company and tend to come back. When customers feel in a negative way, this means they feel dissatisfied or they feel that they didn't make the right choice and company doesn't support them. Well, these customers are more likely to get far from this company because it's all about emotion. The emotional side should be taken into account, not only in the workplace, but also in the business environment in general.
Yeah, yeah. That's a really strong point there. And I did a solo episode on my Tales of Marketing Transformation podcast recently. I won't tell the story here because it goes on for quite some time, but it contrasts two experiences I had with a couple of different companies at about the same time, where in both instances, the product that I used from those companies broke. And in the first instance, it was still under guarantee, but it was so difficult. And this was, of course, in the start of the lockdown that we had because of COVID. And they obviously hadn't adjusted their system. So it was really frustrating and difficult to return the item to get repaired. And yet, in the other instance, it was 2 years beyond the guarantee, but I thought it was a material failure. And they replaced that, no questions asked, easy to do. They were two totally different products, but the experiences were at the same time. And so I contrasted those in that. And it was very, very much along those lines of what you're saying. You know, in the one instance, I was so frustrated that I said to my wife, in fact, if I have to replace this thing, I'm certainly not going to buy that company's product again. Whereas in the other one, next time I upgrade that component, the first company I'll be looking at is the company that helped me out this time.
Thank you very much for this example. Very nice example. And this is connected to the concept of that Daniel Goleman observed, emotional intelligence. Emotional intelligence is not only for close relationship, but also can be applied to business activities. And this is interesting because we have to understand that emotions are very real. So when we, for example, feel affection, for example, for a company or for others, our brain produces a hormone called oxytocin that tries to create a positive bond with others, trust and cooperation bond with others. So we try to get connected, and this is also part of our survival mechanism. So we're social by nature, and when companies try to satisfy needs, customer needs in a good way, this means that customer experience positive emotion, customer feel much more emotionally connected, much more emotionally related to this company, and they're more prone to refer this company to others. This is fundamental. Companies should take into account what we call in marketing touch points. What are the different interactions that we have with this customer? The interaction that could be through the website, by email, through, for example, on the phone, or, for example, in the shop. And all these touch points should bring about positive emotion for customer. If one of these touch points bring negative emotion, this could be bringing about a negative cycle, emotional cycle. This means that customer feel dissatisfied, and then every time that this company try to be avoidant and try not to get with this company so much in contact because they feel that they will be frustrated. So instead, when a company support before the buying process, during the buying process, and afterwards, well, companies are more likely to become successful, and companies should also connect to customer when they're providing this company with negative feedback. I observe that many of the corporate clients are very reluctant to receive negative feedback. And we have to understand, negative feedback from customer is gold. It's gold. It's free research. We don't use any company resources to get information about what we are doing wrong. So it's the source of innovation. In my book, I have 2 chapters about innovation, and I observe this many times. When customers give you negative comments, you should praise them. You should welcome them. You should ask more, because when customers tell you this, and many customers tell you the same, there is something that should be improved, because the product is not for your company, it's for customers. They are the users. So if you're not satisfying them well, you don't have to dismiss this negative feedback. I will call this constructive feedback, because if you dismiss this feedback, competitor will not dismiss this feedback and will try to outpace your company, will try to offer better value, and customer will switch from your company to other. In other words, constructive feedback should be requested, not avoided. It should be requested. And many, for example, companies in the hotel industry, they leave a card at the end for guests to fill, not because they are very pleased with this feedback, because they want to know, are the rooms okay? Is the air conditioning working well? And also, can we satisfy this need in a better way? Can we delight them? Because we have blind spots. Can we discover other ways to satisfy a customer need in a better way? And this is connected to the principle of innovation. Innovation never stops. This means that even a product that is satisfying customer need in a very effective way can be improved. Companies have to continually audit their product, processes, services in order to discover how can we do better. This is what we call continuous quality improvement. This means how can we do better? How can we improve our products and services to get better value for this customer? So this is very, very important. Sorry, I got a bit carried away.
I love that. I sometimes get asked, how can we remove these negative reviews off this platform? And I think, oh, hang on, is that the right attitude? First of all, what is the negative review? What are they telling you? Have you reached out to that person or that company and tried to understand what the issue is and ask them some follow-up questions to learn about their experience? And yeah, I agree with you. That's absolute gold, getting that sort of feedback.
But also we have to understand these negative reviews online should be kept there, because this, the company looks authentic when they have positive reviews and negative reviews. But secondly, online, the company should be sending a message. We will contact you on a personal level to address your issues. And also let us know online or offline if your issues were resolved. Customers should be considered not as a faceless figure in the company database. Should be considered as human beings whose needs should be satisfied, and their money, hard-earned money, should be wisely spent. If we are wasting customer time, we are wasting customer money because we are not giving them products that are satisfying their needs, well, customer will be very dissatisfied, resentful, hateful, and will leave negative reviews. When customers are not satisfied, if we address their needs promptly and try to compensate when possible, this is a compassionate attitude toward customer. Try to compensate means not keeping them holding on the phone, or giving them some free products, or for example, giving them some refunds, or asking them for much more insight into this product. Well, customer will feel acknowledged, they will feel welcome, and also companies also will have some insight that can use to develop new products, new version, new services. This is a very important. They can do some company with this insight from customer, can do some brainstorming sessions, so to discuss, okay, we have 80% of our customers that are telling us that our product breaks up when it's delivered. What is going on there? Is it the packaging? Is it the for example, the ingredients of this product? Is it the delivery process? What is going on? Can we have an interdisciplinary meeting that includes production department, the marketing department, administrative department? What is going on? Can we have different views on this? Because many customers are complaining about this, and we want to take customers very seriously. So what is going on? This is a very important source of information, and it's the beginning of any innovative project. So innovative projects don't get out of the blue. Even we have some inspiration and insight that can be enlightening, but also they come from specific stakeholders, suppliers that are complaining, customers that are complaining, employees that are complaining, community that are complaining, community members. So we have all these stakeholders giving us some feedback. We don't have to ignore this feedback. On the contrary, we have to break this feedback down to know what is going on here. How can we improve our business? How can we solve problems in a better way? What is the same thing to say? How can we add more value to our stakeholders? And this includes not only customers, but also employees and also other stakeholders.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Bruno, for enlightening us and giving us so many concrete examples of how we can be a lot more compassionate in business in various ways with the different stakeholders. There's a lot more to explore there, but we certainly want to leave some aspects of the book for people to actually buy the book and read it. So I think it's a good point to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their fields, with some tips from your experience. So I've got 5 questions, and hopefully you'll give us some answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today as a result.
Thank you.
And the first question relates to innovation. You've just been talking about how important feedback is to innovation. What do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Very important question. And you know what? I will answer this question with a very simple word. Questioning. Questioning. It's all about questioning. So you have to challenge well-ingrained assumptions. Companies get too conservative when they do not challenge their main assumption. This means, what is the best technique to become creative? Asking questions. I'll give you some example of questions. Why questions are so important? Because they help you develop new lines of research. They help you, for example, challenge these ingrained beliefs, how to do business in a specific way. They help you discover new path. For example, they get you much more explorative. But also questions open new perspective on a topic. And some question could be, what are the main strengths and weaknesses of our product and services? What are the potential partnerships that we can develop with other stakeholders? What is the best company doing business in this sector and what they are doing well? But also, what are non-traditional ways to deliver this product or service to customer? You see, some company like Uber or Airbnb, they ask very insightful questions. In the case of Uber, they ask, how can we be successful in the transport sector without owning any vehicle? Yeah. In the case of Airbnb, they said, how can we be successful in the accommodation sector without owning any property? Well, these were insightful questions, but also asking questions about questions, what we call meta question. What are the most important questions that we can ask about this issue? But also asking questions, what we call in an opposite way. For example, I'll give an example. What is negative customer service? So you list some characteristic of negative customer service. So you take note, negative customer service means dismissing customer, treating them disrespectfully, and so on. And then you try to do the opposite. So this is the opposite approach. So a question about what we call concepts. Concepts are important categories in business. For example, customer service is a concept, or for example, customer support, customer satisfaction. How can we improve this concept? How can we enhance a emotional aspect regarding this customer? How can we satisfy this customer in a better way? So, and always try to take into account that question open new lines of research, and you should be exploring. Many companies are very conservative, do not want to explore business issues in a creative way. But this is the wrong approach, because if you don't do so, competitors will do. There is a very interesting book called Innovation or Die. And I like the title, because if you do not innovate,
yes,
sooner or later you will die. Die literally and figuratively, because you will be out of the market. So what type of question can we ask? How can we ask this question in a much more insightful way? And asking good question, many philosophers say, is half the answer. Because open up your view on the business issue. And also, this is very, very simple. Another tool that I would recommend, very simple, is try to make list of positive ideas on your business, what we call a data bank of ideas. Some of these ideas might not be useful. I would recommend my corporate client to make a list of 10 new ideas per day. So this means that you make list of different ideas that could come from article that you read in a newspaper, or feedback from customer, or comment from employees. You make list of these ideas. Some of these ideas might be usable just there, straightforwardly, but some of these ideas might need some what we call incubation, means so need to get much more developed, but having a list of ideas and keeping this in a database will help you enhance the view of your business, will help you get much more innovative. And also some of this idea might be half-baked, can be half-developed, but obviously in some cases, innovative ideas take time. They can be combined, they can be, for example, used in different ways, can be developed, can be discussed much more deeply. This is another tool, very simple tool that companies can use.
Great. Yeah, I love the questioning idea and particularly the digging deeper on the question. I think there's a book by Hal Gregerson too that says questions are the answer, that follows the same philosophy. Yeah. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas? Is it the sort of generating the 10 ideas a day or?
Yes, I did this, but also, you know what is very important? I know that many business people do this. I read things that are not necessarily connected to business. Because I read things from other fields, what we call cross-disciplinary or cross-fertilization. This means that you take ideas from different fields. For example, I like to read a lot about social psychology or philosophy or history. And you can say, oh, but this is not very well connected. Well, okay, everything is connected. When you get ideas from other fields, obviously, your mind tend to tear down all these categories because we have mental categories. So, for example, this is business, this is philosophy, this. But in practice, many of the principles from other disciplines can be applied to business. So, I like to read a lot. I read many books a week, and the idea is I like to read a lot from other disciplines, not only business, but other disciplines, and this enhance my view. And also, they can help me see that many principles are cross-discipline. So this means that what you see, philosophy, the human beings is a human being. So we're talking about human. So, and is the human being for philosophy? Could have different standpoint, but in practice, reading about other disciplines could be important. In the case of company, they should read about other sectors. So if you're in the hotel sector, read about the transport sector or car manufacturing sector, because you might find similar examples that then you can apply what we call analogy in creative techniques. Analogy means that you can apply some principles that they are used in a specific field and you can use to and apply them in other fields. So this car manufacturing company use this business strategy. We are in the hotel sector. Can we take some ideas, not the whole project, can we take some idea and apply to our business project? This is what the expert called cross-fertilization, taking ideas from another field and apply to your own field. This is a very important.
I think that's a really valuable way to go about it. And of course, the ability to connect the dots then is really important. So being able to then ask questions on top of that, coming back to your earlier point. And I think there's case studies around both Uber and Airbnb that suggest that they, you know, observed different industries using that philosophy of sharing people's assets in similar ways. And then they said, hey, if we shared people's cars or shared people's houses or apartments, can we make a business of that? And that's sort of the genesis of the idea.
Yes. And many, for example, businesses especially will say that, for example, McDonald's, the famous franchise, took some ideas, we cannot prove this, but took some idea from the assembly line from the car manufacturing. So getting the products in line and delivering this product in a very systematized way, well, these ideas of, okay, getting the burger ready and everything in line was taking some ideas, some principles were taken from car manufacturing. So this means that you have the assembly line. So everything can be applied, obviously with some specific adaptation. Thing from another discipline can be applied to your own discipline. Thing from another sector can be applied to your own sector when you make the adaptation. So when you read about other topics, you have to ask yourself this question. Is there anything useful that I can apply to my business activities? And this is what we call, the Oriental philosophy called this beginning mind or beginner's mind. Beginner's mind means that you are open-minded. You don't assume that you know it all. You assume that things can be better when you are open to new type of information, new pieces of information.
Yeah, I love that, the idea of the beginner's mind and having a curiosity as well. All right, now what's a favorite resource of yours that you use a lot?
Can you repeat the question, please? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it.
A favorite resource that you use most often?
Yeah, well, favorite resource is a very simple resource. Is, I know that sounds a bit traditional. The favorite resource is books. Yeah. A good business individual is a good reader. And you see Warren Buffett devote many hours. You can say, oh, but this doesn't sound very technological. I want something like the last, give me the last app.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, get a good book and it will open your mind. Get a good book and will take you on a journey. And also read books from different disciplines on a continuous basis. And also books that also preferably backed by research, by science. So a good resource is any book that is suitable. And also even when the book contradicts your views, because in some cases we have ingrained assumptions that cannot be challenged easily. Can we read from another perspective? For example, if you support the position, can we read book from the opposite perspective to have a much more critical thinking approach? So books is the best resource, and books, I like to read books, print books, but also I'm reading a lot of book, e-readers books. So this is a very important point. And also I will say that a very important resource, a personal resource, is taking your time at the beginning of the day to meditate, taking the time to, for example, reflect on ideas from previous day, and what we call self-reflection means, how can I improve things that I, for example, did the previous day? How can make, for example, making a list of things that can be done better this day? So, for example, if you receive some complaint from customer the previous day, and you didn't deal with this complaint in a clear and creative way, how you can improve? Self-reflection is a very important personal resource that many companies do not use. They're not using the most important asset that is their mind. So self-reflection and also meditating. Meditating could be in a structured way or much more informal way, and also books.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, I'm a very voracious reader, and I love the idea of self-reflection, because that plays a lot into many of the areas that we've spoken about now, doesn't it?
Yes, because what happened? Thinking like the crowd is very easy, and also you can have like a herd mentality. And this is what researchers call groupthink. So many people in the group try to think alike. But if you see the great leaders, the great business leader, they are thinking outside the box. They are thinking in a much more daring way. They're thinking about, even in a much more playful way. They don't take the things very seriously in the way, okay, this was the way that things should be done and this will be done forever. No, they challenge. They try to look. Also, the most important concept, in my opinion, in business is value. How can I add more value to my company, to customer, to employees, to the community? This is a question that should be repeated continually. How can I add more value? No, how can I get more profit? How can I get more sales? If you add more value, you will get more profit.
That's right. It results in that, doesn't it?
Because many companies are so focused on these indicators, and we have to understand that these indicators are always the indicators are profitability, productivity, efficiency. They are always the natural result of the interaction between a company and its stakeholders, that are customers, suppliers. When the company improves the relationship with these stakeholders, providing them with high value, this indicator will improve naturally. So companies shouldn't care so much about this indicator, but care more about relationship. Strong relationship with customer, with supplier, employees, community member, and business partner. And by doing so, the relationship will be so strong and will be supporting each other that this indicator will naturally succeed, will naturally go up. So,
All right. Well, my next question normally is something like, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track? But what I think, based on, you know, the conversation we're having, is what's the best way to make sure that the relationship with your clients is on track?
Very important question. Very important. And there are two main principles that apply, that I develop a lot in the book. Generosity and gratitude. So these are the two main principles that many people do not take into account. Generosity, what do we mean? So for example, when you have a client, this means giving them, focusing on them. How do you know that you are generous? When you focus on the other. When you're not generous, you focus on you. You are self-centered. When you are generous, you focus on others. And generosity could be related to material things, for example, giving them some product free, or could be material things that in some cases are more important. For example, writing down a thank you note and sending a personalized thank you note or a hand signed thank you note. This could be important, but also giving them support, giving them, for example, free training, or giving them, for example, welcoming their feedback. This is thankful, but also grateful. Grateful and thankfulness are connected, and they're two byproducts of love. Mm. But also, generosity implies that when companies are generous, they are trying to create this imbalance. They're not doing this willingly, but they're focusing most on them, and they're trying to satisfy their needs. And as a consequence of this, and because of the low reciprocity, customers, employees, community members, and other stakeholders feel compelled to give back, to reciprocate, to support this company. So being generous, being grateful is good business, but grateful also for every single thing, even when the customer doesn't buy from your company. You are grateful, you're not resentful, and you try to also, you can find out also why they didn't buy, but you let them go, and you're grateful for their time. You're grateful for employees' contribution. Employees are giving most of their time during the day to your company. Are you grateful in public with some event? Are you grateful in privately, for example, a pay rise, or for example, giving them some, congratulating them on their contribution, or making them feel participant of this project? Many companies have to obviously recognize the contribution of employees and customers, and including communities too, in a very public way. When the recognition is public, obviously these stakeholders tend to feel much more acknowledged. But in some cases, it could be done also privately with some thank you notes. So thank you, thankfulness and gratefulness, these are two main principles that company can enhance relationship with clients, but also with any stakeholders.
Mm, love it. Thanks. Yeah. So gratitude and generosity and strengthen those relationships ongoing. So you've given us some great examples there. All right, now we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but maybe you could give us a little bit of a synopsis again. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Okay, this is a very important point. Companies can differentiate themselves, harnessing their strengths, and also try to improve or delegate what is connected to their weaknesses. And also not be so reliant on what other companies are doing, because I see some companies that are very externally focused. They say, oh, we try to do things like better than competitors, and we try to follow up their strategy, we try to copy their strategy. This is externally focused, but should be much more internally focused. This means, how can we be more remarkable in the eyes of customers? How can we be more remarkable in the eyes of employees? How can we attract talent naturally? How can we offer our product and sell our product without promoting? How can we make our product be sold with no promotion at all? This means that the product is so good that because of word of mouth, this will become viral and the product will be preferred by customers with no promotion. Think much more about your company, your asset, what we call in the SWOT model, we call your strengths or your core capability. How can we enhance our core capabilities? How can we train our employees to get the best customer service? How can we get a customer the best support when they are asking for example, or they are complaining or where they're requesting for more information? How can we get the best quality? How can we improve our products on a continuous basis? Never ending process. This means that we know that customers are very demanding. They want us for the same product for a decade. They will look for new products, better quality. How can we improve our, and also setting what we call, I like this idea, setting innovation goals. What are the innovation goals that we can set for this year? Can we develop two new products a year? Can we change the packaging of our products over this year? Can we try new material for this product or new ingredients? Can we try different way of distributing the product? Innovation goals, this means that you set some restriction, what in some cases are good for creativity, and you compel your employees and also support your employees when you give them free time also to develop innovative ideas regarding a product or a service. Because continuous innovation is the only way to offer higher value. And we don't do so, other companies will be very willing to do. So, and remember the concept of innovation or die. So if you don't innovate, sooner or later you will be out of business.
Yeah. Yes, and we can point to lots of examples of that, I'm sure. Now, I love that you talked there about kind of the balance between the inward focus and the outward focus, and the outward focus should be on delighting the customer, not copying your competition, and the inward focus is about improving your areas where, yeah, they're areas of weakness or exploring innovation. So I really love how you kind of married those two together.
Yeah,
so this has also, been, sorry, go ahead.
No, I wanted to say that not only focusing on product and services, but also how can I improve this relationship with the stakeholders. Also think about the relationship, because they are the building block, they are the brick of any business activity. You improve your products, you improve your services, you improve your processes, your systems, your policies, but at the same time is how can I acknowledge these stakeholder needs in a much more insightful way, in a much more valuable way? How can I acknowledge as a human being how I can treat them much more respectfully in a much more supportive way? By doing so, also, you will find some new idea for product and service. Yeah. Also, you can start thinking about the company's relationship, and then you go into these product and services. But relationship, remember, is the building block of any business activity.
Mm, yes, thanks for pointing that out. And it comes back to the fact that in the entire customer journey, there are so many touch points that you have with customers, and likewise with suppliers or with employees and with other stakeholders. All right. Well, this has been absolutely fabulous, Bruno. I mean, there's a lot more to explore here, but I would like to encourage people to go check out your book, check out your website. So where can people find out more about you and about your work, and also get a hold of the book, The Art of Compassionate Business, and maybe even reach out and say thanks for what you've shared with us today?
Thank you very much for your invite. You're very generous. Thank you for your invite again. I want to say that people can reach me. I have different websites, but the most common website that people can visit is www.humanorientedenterprise.com. www.humanorientedenterprise.com. They can find the book, The Art of Compassionate Business, everywhere, offline, online. This is all worldwide, in any bookshops, online, offline. And also they can check my profile on LinkedIn if they want to join me on LinkedIn. I post articles frequently. And thank you for this question that are very insightful. I felt very comfortable, and really, you are a very good interviewer. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thanks. Now, what parting advice would you like to leave our listener today?
Okay. This is a very good question. And this is a question that I want to answer in a very simple way. How can companies make the world environment, the business environment, and the work environment more valuable? How they can be more loving? How they can be more supportive? This is a question that should be asked on a continuous basis. So, but it's important for companies to understand that business is about relationship. These indicators are not the main focus. They're not the priority. This sounds counterintuitive, because many companies are so focused and so obsessed with these business indicators. But if you support the relationship, you support the human being, this indicator, I can promise you, and I can give you a guarantee that if you support the relationship, business indicator will naturally thrive, because the relationship are the building block. So a very important question that any company leader and any company employee should ask: how can I support the human being, the supplier, the other employees, customers, the community member? How can I make this a much more insightful approach and developing much more valuable relationship with them?
Yeah. That's great advice. And I think it sort of encapsulates a lot of what we've talked about today. All right. Well, thanks for that. Now, finally, who is someone else I need to get on this podcast?
Someone else that you need? I cannot recommend any person, but I can recommend that a topic that you should probably explore. I think that a very important topic for you to explore is motivation. What are the sources of motivation? What are the sources of motivation, and what is the relationship between motivation and passion in business? So how can we get, I have a full chapter in the book about passion, but I think that this topic can be explored much more. What is the main source of passion? but passion in relation to business. How can employees get more passionate? How can CEOs get more passionate? How can a customer get more passionate about this company? So passion and motivation are very well connected, and different type of motivation. You have intrinsic motivation, extrinsic motivation. This can be explored and connected to passion. I think that any specialist that you find in this topic will be very valuable.
Mm, great. Well, we'll do a little bit of research ourselves and look for people who work in that kind of area. I know one of my recent guest suggestions from the last or the previous podcast is a business coach that works with executives, and a lot of what she talks about on her website is in this kind of space. So that might be somebody, but we'll dig a little bit deeper and see who else there is in playing in this sort of space. Thanks for that, Bruno. And thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously today. I've really enjoyed this, and there's been a lot there that we've unpacked today, and I hope that the listener gets as much out of this as I have. And I wish you all the best for the future, Bruno, and please do stay in touch.
Thank you very much for inviting again. Thank you. I felt very comfortable. Thank you very much. I hope that this is of use and of value for the listener.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that insightful and informative conversation with Bruno and took something away from his episode. I love Bruno's closing thoughts, the question of how can we make our business, our relationships, and our world environment more valuable, more caring, and more loving. I'm curious to know what you took away from Bruno's episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/Bruno Signaco. That is BRUNOCIGNACCO. All lowercase or one word, innovabiz.co/Bruno Signaco. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Bruno there, as well as links to the Human Oriented Enterprise website, to his personal website, to his various books, his social media pages, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. Bruno suggested we have conversations on future InnovaBuzz podcast episodes with experts in the field of the sources of motivation and the relationship of motivation with passion. These are really interesting topics for all entrepreneurs, so I'll do a little research to identify some future guests in this field. Tune in again to the next episodes of the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we've got even more fantastic guests lined up, including Dave McEwen from Outfield Leadership and Jerry Kaolin of Click Giant. Thanks for listening to this episode. Make sure you subscribe to the show to be reminded of new episodes. It's free to subscribe. Leave a review if you like. Even if you don't like me, I'm okay with that. I'm asking you to leave a review because it helps other people find this show. Go to innovabiz.co to join our marketing transformation community and access a free gift my team and I made for you. It's the Marketing Master Mini Class. We want to give you everything you need to transform your marketing into a human-centered, relationship-focused growth engine. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.